Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Listening to that song today, other than that, I was just enjoying it. Yep. So I woke up early today, and I don't know, as I was reading, you know, as I was reading, I feel hope. Yeah, how crazy is that? I feel hope. Because I'm seeing more and more adults. Yeah, you know, I've been saying, like, where are the adults? When are they going to come home and stop this craziness? Now, that certainly doesn't include any of our elected leaders, because they're stewards of the craziness. And so, but you, what I see is more and more people writing about the craziness and how this has to stop. And so so it gives me hope, right, that it is becoming the popular narrative. I also saw the commissioner of the National Basketball Association. he was asked about the very overt nature of the NBA's, you know, you can put a cause on the back of your jersey. You could put somebody's name on the back of your jersey. It's all over their floors. It's, and their viewership is down 45%. And so, Adam Silver, who is the commissioner of the NBA, said, yeah, that stuff probably will not be part of, you know, what's on our floor, what's on our jersey as we go forward. And then he made an interesting comment. Now, what was interesting about his comment was that he wasn't taken to task for any of it by his players, who seem to have a sense for their wallet before they have a sense of any other thing. Okay. And we saw this when the NBA went to China. And, you know, Hong Kong is going through what Hong Kong went through before the Chinese rolled down there and took control over Hong Kong. Something they said they wouldn't do. There's a treaty that says they wouldn't do it. I mean, so, but the basic shit that totalitarian governments do. Well, the NBA ignored it. Why? Because their financial interests are such. However, the whole thing gets dusted up when the general manager of the Houston Rockets says that we stand in support of Hong Kong, which is something that most Americans would say. Free people who want to be free. We stand in, not a peep out of the NBA. Why? Because, you know, yeah, you know, what's going on in Hong Kong is Hong Kong's business and not going to get near my wallet. I mean, come on. What do you want from me? Well, to me, there's like, make no mistake that the nation, well, let me just put it this way. 45% of the people who normally watch the NBA finals aren't watching them. NBA viewership is at an all-time low. We'll see if game, whatever it is, 5, that gets played, maybe tonight, if that's any different. Or we'll see if it's worse. And make no mistake about it, part of that is people in this country are sick of getting, you know, a political narrative shoved down their throats, and that is the political narrative of Black Lives Matter. And the majority of Americans aren't buying it. So anyway, it gives me hope, right? So I'm encouraged by the fact that I see people, Democrats, I saw a column. Now, I don't agree, because when you're partisan, it's either all Trump's fault or it's all, you know, Nancy Pelosi's fault or whatnot. The bottom line is they're birds of the same feather. They deal in the same narcotic. They play the same game. And the game has gotten so toxic that yesterday you have the FBI with a press conference saying that some goofballs in Michigan were going to kidnap the governor because she's lost her mind and strayed beyond her constitutional powers, which the Supreme Court of the state of Michigan said she had. So there's enough craziness out there, and you would expect that no matter who you are, we have certain values as Americans, and that is we value free speech, we value freedom. And when anybody would take away somebody's right to assemble or somebody's right to speak peacefully, we should all be, you know, we should all be concerned about that. But that's not what our elected leaders today do. They, you know, if people riot and they smash windows and they loot and they, because somebody's coming to speak them, well, by, I guess by all means, we should not, you know, get after the people that are rioting. We should just cancel the speaker. And so those chickens have come home to roost in this country. And if you're a lefty, you blame it on Donald Trump. If you're a righty, you blame it on Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And the truth is, they're the same beast. They're the same disgusting beast. But I'm encouraged because academics this week have taken, you know, much bolder stance than I've seen them take in the past. And then you're seeing moderates on both sides saying, hey, you know, this shit is wrong. And no matter who wins or who loses, it's wrong. So, yeah, how about that? How about that? I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged that you're starting to see people say the right thing. And that I find that encouraging. Now, let me tell you what I don't find encouraging. I'm still scratching my head at what the New York Times has become. I find that absolutely incredible that the publisher, you know, Mr. Sulzberger, is so, I don't know what you would call it, negligent in his professional responsibilities to the people that read that paper, to the precedent setting way that the New York Times is looked at and the things they do and how that affects that industry. But that business is really, really hurting that entire industry. And I find that, I don't know why I can't get that out of my head. And the whole 1619 Project, when you have historians from around the country that say, look, this stuff is not a matter of interpretation. It's a matter of fact. And yet you have the New York Times trumpeting this shit. Like, what is going on there? And so I don't know why that's had such an impact on me. But because it's not like it's a new issue or anything like that. But for whatever reason, I've just come to it, late to the party. Albeit, but I've come to it. But I am encouraged that you're seeing more and more people write about this tone and tenor in the nation. And that I saw an article that says that we go through this about every 60 years. So that the stuff we went through with the 60s was about 60 years ago. The stuff we went through in the 60s, right, was about 60 years after, the anarchist stuff that we went through in the, you know, between 1900 and 1910 in this country. So it's kind of an interesting historical look at that stuff. And its essential thesis is, and I've spoken about this before, but everybody learned why you have a savings account here recently. Everybody learned about why financial security is a good thing and why our grandparents were so adamant about it. Because things like the Dust Bowl and the Depression were not theoretical events to them. They were not things they read about in books. They were things they lived through, they endured to the tune of 10 years coming out of it during World War II. So to me, it was an interesting article that said that, you know, these things happen, and because the values that the current inhabitants of the nation, while they've learned them in textbooks, they're not real to them in terms of their life experience. And so we stray from these things, these truths that we hold to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that everybody's got the right to assemble, that freedom of speech is very important and ought to be protected, and our system of justice, that system of due process, that has to be reestablished and looked at again. And so it was an interesting article, and you know, the hypothesis of the article was that we are going through that today, that people who believe that social media is filled with truth and then they act on that are going to have to learn that we're a nation of laws. And again, I go the Derek Chauvin thing. He was released on $1 million bail bond. So I don't know what he had to put up, 10% of that? So he had to raise $100,000. So he evidently raised it. The judge assessed he was not a risk flight or a danger to himself or other people. And so, like any American, he was released on bail. And if you saw some of the interviews that were conducted about it, you know, it's trying to govern the world based on what you see on Facebook and Twitter, not by the laws of the nation. And then it always takes me back to that, the thing that I read yesterday that Ohio man sent me, written by, and I kept it. There's things I keep in a folder. It's actually a PowerPoint that is open on my desk all the time. Yep. And it is essentially my notes. And I keep a bunch of stuff in them. Well, what pray tell would you keep in there, Mac? Well, things that I would go to all the time. Okay. For instance, there's maps in here for the Battle of Samar. There's a map in here of the South China Sea and the first island chain, the second island chain. There's another map that shows weapons ranges from China and what is known as the weapon exclusion zone. There's another picture of the flag raising, who's who in the zoo, because we've gone through that a few times. There's pictures of Kaesong. There's also where money comes from relative to the federal government. Right. So 3.8 trillion in spending. 2.5 trillion comes from taxes. Borrowing is about half of $1 trillion. This is in 2015. And other tax revenues come from trust funds, which is another 1.3 trillion. And that is the Social Security Trust Fund, the Medicare taxes, excise taxes, custom duties, and other. So when you think about the budget, like, where does our money come from? Where does our money go? Mandatory spending of the 2015 budget, $3.8 trillion, $2.45 trillion was mandatory spending. Interest on the debt, $229 billion. That's right. And then discretionary spending, $1.11 trillion. And that is defense, other, education, housing and community, international affairs, energy and the environment, and then transportation, of which defense is by far the biggest discretionary item, which is why you hear it debated so vigorously. There's also border crossing numbers. Yeah, that's in there. There's a map of Beirut, because when I had Ron Baskowski on, I've kept that map. There's a chronology of who banned slavery and when. So we just started, you know, there's this assertion that the nation was established in 1619 for the furtherance of slavery. Slavery is not the first state abolishes slavery here in the United States in 1777. That is the state of Vermont. So in 1777, the state of Vermont, an independent republic after the American Revolution, becomes the first sovereign state to abolish slavery. In 1780, the transatlantic slave trade reaches its peak. Now, then, in the late 1700s, you see nations begin to look at banning the importation of slaves. Okay, so they enact laws in the late 18th century, so that's the 1700s, right? Not to take effect until years later. And again, they don't ban slavery, they ban the importation of slaves. Okay, so when you're saying guys like Washington and Jefferson, they were these horrible people, they were slave owners, blah blah blah. The world had legalized slavery in it. And at the end of the 18th century, they're only at that point, I'm digressing here, I know that. Going through my little file here. Which I'll come back to my point here in a minute. But anyway, so to me, the whole history of slavery. And that's why it makes even the New York Times even more absurd. But anyway, so in the late 18th century, Denmark bans the importation of slaves. In 1807, Britain passes the Abolition of the Slave Trade Act, outlawing British Atlantic slave trade. Not slavery. The slave trade. The United States passes legislation banning the slave trade, effective in 1808. Okay, so they do it in 1807. It's effective a year later. So it's the trading, the international trading of slaves, not slavery. In 1811, Spain becomes the first nation to abolish slavery. Slavery, including in its colonies, although Cuba rejects the ban and continues to deal in slaves. In 1813, Sweden bans slave trading. In 1814, the Netherlands bans slave trading. Now, mind you, nobody other than Spain has abolished slavery itself. In 1817, France bans slave trading, but that trading ban won't be effective until 1826, 9 years later. In 1819, Portugal abolishes the slave trade north of the equator. So if you're south of the equator, if you're going from Africa to South America, that's not banned. So Portugal getting out its X-Acto knife. In 1819, Britain places a naval squadron off the west coast of Africa to enforce the ban on slave trading. In 1823, Britain's Anti-Slavery Society is formed. In 1833, Britain is the superpower on the planet, right? Britain passes the Abolition of Slavery Act, ordering a gradual abolition of slavery in all British colonies. In all British colonies, plantation owners in the West Indies received £20 million in compensation. Great Britain and Spain also sign a treaty prohibiting the slave trade. In 1848, France abolishes slavery. So 1833, Britain abolishes slavery. France in 1848, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, that's in there. There's some more, a couple more maps on China. There's a picture of who watches what in terms of TV news. Yep. So you see the networks. The number one news network. Now this is a while ago. This is, I don't know, a year or two ago. But number one news network was NBC, followed by ABC, followed by CBS. The number one cable news is Fox News, which has an audience at the time that was double MSNBC and almost triple CNN. I should update that. There's a map of North Korea's Scud range on their missiles. Yeah, that's interesting. There's a rise, it shows data on the rise of number of nuclear tests that North Korea has done over the course of years. There's a map of Syria and the conflict in Syria. There's a map of international defense spending. The United States in 2013, $640 billion, 3.8% of GDP. China, $188 billion, 2% of GDP. Russia, $87 billion, 4% of their GDP. How crazy is that? Russia spends $87 billion on defense annually, and it's 4% of their GDP. The United States spends approximately 4% of its GDP, and the budget is $640 billion. I mean, Russia, this gigantic nation with a tiny, tiny economy. So that's in there. And then there's some like board stuff and things like that. So anyway, but what I was getting to is, you know, when these people are writing things about, I know I digress, when these people are writing things, it reminds me their lament consistently is like, why aren't people speaking up? And so yesterday, Ohio Man sent me something that a German pastor wrote that I have in my head. And that is, when they came for the communists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. When they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. When they came for the trade unionists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. When they came for the Catholics, what? I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. When they came for me, by that time, there was nobody left to speak up. And written by a pastor, Martin Niemöller, in 1946, he gave the speech. I found out about the speech. The speech wasn't recorded because they didn't do things like that back then. Yeah. And so he then later reconstructed the speech, and there's different variations of it out there. So to me, when I think about these kind of things, these are the things I think about. And I am encouraged a little bit. And the next month, is it next month? Not even a month. In the next 4 weeks, 3+ weeks before the election, it's going to get worse. But you have more and more non-political people that are standing up and say, hey, this isn't right. You know, our universities have to support free and open discourse. That's what they do. They have to support critical thinking. That's what they do. And the stuff that they support, our universities have become places of intolerance and indoctrination. What does that sound like? It sounds like a totalitarian state. And and I'll tell you, it's painful because you meet young people who believe this stuff. And if you simply do what Will Costantini says, is, you know, that it doesn't survive the second. Show me. What are you talking about? Where? And they can't do it. Oh, well, you know what I'm talking about. You know? And so, again, systemic racism is a large charge. And so anyway, I'm hopeful because I'm seeing more and more stuff written on a daily basis as I peruse the news. And so I'm just hopeful that as we begin, as the grown-ups begin to stand up and say, okay, it's time for us to have this discussion. And it's going to anger people on the extremes. But if the responsible and good people in the middle don't stand up, you cede the argument to the people on the extremes, and that's not a good thing for the country. It's not a good thing for anybody. So good morning. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that more adults show up. The Yankees won last night. Yeah, to force a game five, a deciding game five in which Gerrit Cole, one of the best pitchers in baseball, he will go to the mound for the Yankees. And the Tampa Bay Rays will send Tyler Glass now to the mound for them. And he's a great-looking young pitcher, so it will be high theater. In the one of the American League Division Series. So Yankees and Tampa will play. So good Friday morning. Greg Lotus is going to join me here in about 32 minutes. So we'll talk to him, and we'll check the news here coming up. I really stopped paying attention to the COVID thing. Because here's what I see is that if you do the things you're supposed to do, you can live your life. And you can get through this. If you don't do the things you're supposed to do, you're going to put yourself at risk. Now, if you do get COVID, the survival rate is extremely high. And so every community is having to learn these lessons about we can't simply stay at home. Can't do it. People have to go to work. And then they start moving around and they begin to act like, oh yeah, there's nothing, I can do this. And then people begin to get sick. And then policymakers, because they don't want to be on the hook for it, they overreact to it. Colleen's school district just said, yeah, we're not going back to school. She was supposed to go back next week. Yeah, we're not going back to school till I think after the semester. So at some point, the bill for all of this will come due. And it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be painful. So, but I, you know, it's to me a daily expose of the quality of leadership we have across the country. And they're scared shitless. They're scared shitless. So it's on a daily basis, it's not pretty. So, but I'm hopeful. As more and more people seem to get what's going on in the country and begin to speak out, and the nation desperately needs that. It is Friday. Whitney Houston makes Friday official. So good morning to you. does that pretty well. This is dedicated to the weekend. I hope everybody has a great weekend. So to everybody who listens out there, don't be afraid to be an adult. Have a good weekend. Shut the TV off. Go do something good. And I would tell you this. I got an interesting email from Bev earlier this week about Greg Lotus and I had a discussion about the things that bring joy into your life. And do you do those things often enough? And if you don't, you need to take a look at that. You know, one of the things that I think everybody's, you know, had to do with more time at home is the opportunity to reflect. And one of the things I think that is important that you do is reflect on your life and what brings you joy in your life. Are you doing that enough? And if the answer to that is no, then you got to do something about that. So this is dedicated to that proposition, joy.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
To the weather we go on a Friday. Weather's beautiful out here on the West Coast, not going to lie to you. Currently in Quantico, it is, what is it? It is mostly cloudy and 65 in Quantico. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is partly cloudy and 73. 29 Palms, partly cloudy, 73. That's not a typo. Same as Camp Lejeune. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton cooled off. Cloudy and 60 right now. Whoa. That's not true. That's not accurate, though. It's not cloudy and 60 there. Just a bad report. It happens. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 70. Okinawa, dark, clear, and 74. Down under in Darwin, where it's been about 80 degrees. Right now, it's dark, cloudy, and 81. And then in Oslo, Norway, it is partly sunny and 54 degrees. Currently here at the home of All Marine Radio, cloudy and 68. Looking for a high today of 73, 74 tomorrow, 75 on Sunday, 84 on Monday, 89 on Tuesday. What in the hell is that about? Almost into November by that time, and we're going to do that. What kind of punk-ass nonsense is that? So, we'll take a break. More of this fine program coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. We will check news headlines, and then Gregory Lotus will join me, and we'll talk about life and some other shit. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hey, yeah, yeah.
We should probably recut that thing. Yeah, she did that a few years ago. You could hear Colleen in the full beauty of her grown-up voice. Yeah. My ex has a deep voice. Colleen's getting one. She doesn't always like that. But, hey, such is life, man. Such is life. To the news we go, although I would be remiss. Couple of weather forecasts in I'm not sure where this is. Chris Cox says it's 41 degrees wherever he's at. I'm not sure where he's at though. Up in Saskatchewan, Bev's contribution to shithole weather. It's Canadian Thanksgiving weekend. Thankfully, no snow is in the forecast like we had last year. A mix of sun and clouds with a northwest wind at 19 miles an hour today. Current temp is 46 degrees, feels like 39. The afternoon high will be at 52 and it'll feel like 46. So the people that live in the Great North getting ready for winter. The rest of us, not so much. Well, we are kind of getting ready for our version of what winter is, but you guys would ridicule us if we spoke of it, so we won't. But good luck with your winter. Yep. Good luck. So, hold on. Top headline in Stars and Stripes. The news tends to be so depressing. But, come on, you got to do it. Top headline, Army holds supervisor responsible for uniformed reservist Democratic Convention appearance. And there's a picture from a video, two soldiers standing at attention behind Alatama Sotoia, chairman of the American Samoan Democratic Party. He's in orange. He cast the territory's 11 votes for Joe Biden in a brief segment of the Democratic National Convention on August 8, 2020. So you had two members of the National Guard standing there. Two Army Reserve soldiers who appeared in uniform in a broadcast segment of the Democratic National Convention in August will not be disciplined for the breach of rules, but their supervisor will be, according to a news report. The two soldiers who have not been identified are from the 9th Mission Support Command in Hawaii, as they say it, and appeared during the presentation of delegates from American Samoan during the convention's roll call of states. American Samoan Democratic Party leaders Patty Matila and Alitama Sotoia expressed their support for former Vice President Joe Biden, who became the party's official nominee. The uniformed soldiers wearing black protective face masks stood beside and slightly behind the two. So the Army begins investigating this. The investigation found their supervisor violated a Department of Defense directive and a field army regulation that governs soldier political activities, Lieutenant Colonel Simon Flake, chief of media relations for the Army Reserve Strategic Communications, told Stars and Stripes on Thursday. The supervisor at fault will receive the appropriate level of disciplinary action for violating the governing standards, Flake said. No details about what the punishment will be, though. So probably not your basic, bread and water event, but nonetheless, if you have standards and you won't enforce them, do you really have standards? Commander at the Joint Base Lewis McChord up in Washington, home of, I believe, the 2nd Infantry Division, if I'm not mistaken. So the commander of the Lewis McChord Base Hospital is suspended and under investigation. So who really cares? Here's another headline, right? This is why we don't need Stars and Stripes, right? Marine who made video using racial slurs is under investigation by the service. A Marine Corps spokesman identified the Marine in the video as PFC Jarrett Morford, 20, and said Morford's command is taking the appropriate action. And the picture is of a PFC who looks like he's about 15, right, in a video. A Marine who posted a video online in which he uses slurs against Chinese people and threatens to shoot them when he deploys with the fleet is now under investigation. Right? I mean, it used to be they just said stupid shit in formation and to their friends. Now they get the opportunity to show their ass to the planet. The U.S. and Romania have signed a 10-year defense cooperation agreement. In a cultural shift, Okinawa Marines take island during drills and turn outward to support the Navy. What does that mean? Aishima. So we've been seizing Aishima forever. It's actually the place where Ernie Pyle was killed, in case you don't know that. He was killed on the island of Iwo Jima, which is off the northwestern coast of Okinawa. Yep. So Ernie Pyle was killed there during World War II. Ernie Pyle, the great newspaper writer and chronicler of the quote-unquote GI during World War II. Sergeant Cal Cushing Hurley and his squad from Camp Lejeune-based 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, I know those guys, could hardly contain their enthusiasm for their first Pacific exercise, a simulated airfield seizure on a tiny island off Okinawa's northwestern coast. Who told you that? They were among the first wave of about 100 Marines to land at an airfield aboard MV-22 Ospreys on Wednesday during drills dubbed Noble Fury. I'm excited to put all of our practice into action, the sergeant said. He's from Marshfield, Massachusetts. It's always good to get live reps in and reinforce everything you've trained for. Noble Fury is the first time joint training exercises between Marines and sailors of 3MEF and the Navy 7th Fleet, according to a Tuesday statement from 3MEF. It's designed to improve 3MEF and 7th Fleet's working relationship through simultaneous distributed events. Now, this is the further integration that the Commandant of the Marine Corps is looking for relative to United States Navy. So, 1-2, which saw post-traumatic winning a few months ago. So, anyway. So, 1-2 on Aishima doing their thing. I saw this yesterday and I thought, wow. Listen to this. Ex-Guantanamo commander sentenced for lying in a man's death. This is a United States Navy captain, a former commander. See, it's confusing because Navy has the rank commander. This guy's not a commander. He's a captain. A federal judge in Jacksonville, Florida, sentenced Navy Captain John R. Nettleton. He was convicted in January of obstruction of justice, concealing material facts, falsifying records, and making false statements. Nettleton, 54, was removed from command shortly after Christopher Turr was found floating in waters off the base on the southeastern coast of Cuba. He had commanded the base since June of 2012, but not the detention center where suspected terrorists were held. Nettleton wasn't charged in Turr's death. Nettleton denied to his superior officer and others that he had had an affair, but investigators later determined that it had happened, according to federal prosecutors in Jacksonville, where Nettleton had been on temporary duty. Turr's wife confirmed the affair during her testimony. Hell hath no fury. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, sentenced to 2 years in prison. United States Navy captain. Yeah. Here's a study, United States Navy. And this is nonstop with the United States Navy. If the Navy wants sailors for a lifetime career, treat them like family, a study suggests. What does that mean? How can we make the military, like, how can we make you being gone for extended periods of time? How can we make that? How can we make that more family friendly? I don't. Sometimes I think that we have this, that you can do all of this without being inconvenienced. And it's just, in my opinion, crazy. If you want a life of service to the nation, it's going to come with some hardship. And it's going to mean you're going to be gone. And you're going to learn how to do that. And if that's not for you, then that's not for you. But you can't make, it's like in the Navy, they want to make it like you could be a civilian and do this job. You know, you can go there for 6 or 7 hours and go home and it's okay. It ain't that way. It ain't that way. I hate to break that bad news to people, but anyway. I'm certainly not picking on the Navy because the Marine Corps is not far behind it. Wall Street Journal. U.S. stocks on course for its best month in 3 months. So that going on. Trump's businesses face debt. I don't care about that. Chinese exports to the United States get a lifeline from COVID-related demand. And then there's a couple interesting opinion pieces. This is by a United States senator, an American coup attempt. Now, I will tell you this, the more intelligence that comes out, and it's certainly not being covered by mainstream media, right? But if this had been done to Hillary Clinton, they'd be all over it like a hobo on a ham sandwich. Or if it had been done to Barack Obama. It's entitled An American Coup Attempt. Time may be running out to expose the efforts to overthrow Trump, which began before his election. Now, again, evidence has come out. And Ron Johnson is a Republican senator from Wisconsin. He's the chair of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. And here's what he writes. In the United States, the U.S. is in a constitutional crisis. It began the day President Trump was elected, when unelected bureaucrats mobilized against his presidency. This is a crisis in the executive branch, perpetuated by subordinate officials who don't see themselves as answerable to the president. They have effectively established a fourth branch of government, a permanent, unaccountable bureaucracy. The first public display of insurrection began with leaked transcripts of Mr. Trump's phone calls with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto on January 27, 2017, and the Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull the following day. As the Senate Homeland Security Committee reported, the Trump administration was plagued with 62 leaks possibly endangering national security in its first 125 days, compared with 9 such leaks during the George Bush and 8 under the Barack Obama. In 2019, a whistleblower upped the ante by leaking details of Mr. Trump's phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. This fueled Mr. Trump's impeachment in December. Between those examples of mutiny against the president, corrupt actors within the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and apparently based on recent disclosures, other parts of the intelligence community used their power to sabotage the administration. Their actions can only be described as an attempted coup. As the Ukraine whistleblower attorney Mark Zaid did on January 30th tweet, hashtag coup has started. First of many steps, hashtag rebellion, hashtag impeachment will follow ultimately. Throughout the constitutional crisis, many journalists abetted the plotters by abandoning even the pretense of objectivity and claiming that Mr. Trump poses a grave threat to the country. These members of the press were willing recipients of leaks that created and perpetuated the false narrative that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. Not one member of the media has exposed these sources of false information. They knew who the leakers and the plotters are. They won't tell you. Unfortunately, there are people who are working to uncover the truth. I'm sorry. Fortunately, there are people that are working to uncover the truth. Former House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Attorney General William Barr, former Acting Director of National Intelligence Richard Grenell, his successor John Ratcliffe, and my committee, along with the Senate Finance and Judiciary Committees, are working to declassify important information and make it public. Unfortunately, uncovering the truth isn't easy, and time may be running out. Should Joe Biden win the presidency, the truth may be hidden forever. Here's what we know. And this is crazy stuff. On July 5th, 2016, then FBI Director James Comey overstepped his authority and publicly exonerated Hillary Clinton while criticizing her conduct. The same day in London, the FBI met with Christopher Steele, author of the now debunked anti-Trump dossier. U.S. intelligence agencies received reporting that the Russians believed Hillary Clinton approved the plan on July 26th to stir up a scandal by tying Trump to Russian hacking of a Democratic National Committee email server. Then CIA Director John Brennan later briefed President Obama about the reporting. Also on July 26, a friendly foreign government gave the chargé d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy in London information that George Papadopoulos suggested the Trump team had received some kind of suggestion that Russia might release information damaging to the Clinton campaign, according to a December report from the Justice Department Inspector General. At that time, according to the public reports, Gina Haspel, now director of the CIA, was agency's chief of station in London. On July 31st, the FBI opened Crossfire Hurricane, its intelligence probe into the Trump administration. So Senator Johnson goes on a little bit. And the picture that gets painted as these memos are declassified are that this stuff had been briefed, and there was more than enough evidence that I think anybody who didn't have a political agenda and was doing their job would say, you can't do anything with this shit. Yet an investigation was opened, wiretaps were approved, FISA court was approached. Those documents, now it turns out, were falsified as well. Now, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, because I don't think there's any other conclusion. And then I'll get Greg Lotus on. When the President of the United States knows about it, when people in the Oval Office are briefed about it, and this shit continues, what do you call such a thing if you don't call it a conspiracy? What do you call it? And again, this stuff is being declassified. It's not being fabricated. This is declassified conversations between the people in the executive branch of the government, the intelligence community, the FBI, that were talking about these things with a sitting president. Kind of gross. Anyway, more Ballroom Radio coming up next.